Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Only Ones, The Only Ones.
Okay.
Okay. No idea.
No, it's not really ringing a bell for me either.
Only Ones. Okay. Pop rock group in the 70s.
It's their self-titled album. Is it their debut album?
It is their debut album.
Okay.
So this is what it says on allmusic.com. It says, The Only Ones were a band that became identified with the British punk scene largely because a leader, Peter Parrott, had a funny voice and could write a great straightforward rock and roll song at a time when such virtues were possessed almost exclusively by the Faster and Louder Brigade. This helps explain why The Only One's self-titled debut is regarded as a classic of the first wave of UK punk, despite the presence of the mid-tempo jazz accent in Breaking Down. The 50s pop moves of the opening cut, The Whole of the Law, The Beast, which sounds like some sort of lethargic neo-boogie, and the graceful semi-acoustic, semi-samba No Peace for the Wicked. Of course, when The Only Ones felt like rocking out, they did it brilliantly, and along with the instant classic Another Girl, Another Planet, this album includes the sinister but rollicking City of Fun and the feedback-drenched crunch of The Immoral Story, which points to another factor that made The Only Ones heroes in their day. Their eclecticism was rooted in a genuine talent for embracing different sounds rather than the inability to pick a style and master it. Parrott and his bandmates, John Perry on guitar, Alan Mayer on bass, and Mike Kelly on drums, sound like a tight and imaginative combo, even when they're surrounded by keyboard and horn overdubs, and Parrott's tales of one guy's search for love and coherence in a fractured world are intelligent, witty, and deeply cutting at all times. If the creative ambition of The Only Ones sometimes comes at the price of a tight stylistic focus that would make these songs cohere better, every track is memorable in its own way, and these 10 songs always have heart, soul, and honesty to spare. And if that isn't always the benchmark of punk rock, it's at least in the neighborhood.
All right. Well, it doesn't have to be punk to be good.
No. Okay, so, yeah, so this album was released in April of 1978, and the genres are power pop, new wave, and punk rock, and was released on Columbia Records and produced by The Only Ones and Robert Ash. And there are 10 songs on the album, and it's split pretty evenly 5 and 5. So what we'll do is, if you're listening along with this, which we encourage you to do, and I've linked the album in the show notes to both Apple Music and Spotify, so you can listen on your preferred medium. And so what we do is we'll take the album at the halfway point, or side one and side two, and we'll discuss halfway through. So if you are listening along, we'll stop. The album starts with the song "The Whole of the Law," and side one stops with the song called "The Beast." So we'll stop there, and we'll discuss halfway through. Okay. So here we go. Here's the first song on the album called "The Whole of the Law." Here we go.
All right.
Okay, and ending side one with "The Beast." Yeah, this is really good.
Yeah, this is pretty good. His voice takes some getting used to at first.
Yeah, I definitely felt that the first song. I was like, oh, this is the first song was odd because it's a slower ballad sort of thing.
Yeah, it's nothing like the rest of the album. It seems to be. Or at least nothing like the second, like the first half of the album.
Yeah.
The first half.
And when his voice came on that, I was like, oh, okay. I don't know about this. Yeah.
He's kind of like a cross between Mark Bolan and Lou Reed.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's kind of perfect. Yeah. Yeah. I think his voice fits better with the other songs rather than "The Whole of the Law." But yeah, it does take some getting used to, but it wasn't that bad once I got into it. I mean, this is, you know, British rock bands in the late 1970s. I mean, they all kind of sound like this. Not all of them, but it's a very common style. Yeah, in this era.
It's definitely got a sort of a punk attitude, but yeah, like they were saying, the band, when you listen to what the band's doing, it's not really punk. It's very pop rock. It's almost like, well, it reminds me of like what Blondie was doing, although they would sometimes be considered punk as well. Sometimes.
Well, I think a good comparison would be like not the vocals, but the music is, it reminds me of The Knack.
Okay.
So
yeah, The Knack or,
like that power, the late 70s power pop new wave sort of stuff, like Cheap Trick.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Especially that guitar player. He reminds me of Mark Campbell.
The last song, I was like, oh, this is some stuff that Mike Campbell would do.
Yeah.
And really? So it's like, oh, okay. All right. This is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that last song. The Beast is a really good song.
Yeah. The review was right in that not all this, there isn't a whole lot of cohesiveness for the album. Like all of the songs are pretty different stylistically in structure, tempo, chord structure. Like on this album, there's maybe still trying to figure out who they are and sort of trying to find their sound.
I think they sort of found a sound. It's just their sound is an eclectic sound. They've just got a lot of things, and this is their first album, and it's sort of a mixed bag of what they had at that time so far. So I think that's really all this is. It's just a collection of their stuff that they were doing. It's certainly not a concept album.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And it's interesting. They were, the other Heartbreakers, Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers, they were heavily influenced by that. I was reading a bit about them and, they had something to do with that band as Parrott and Kelly, caught the eye of Johnny Thunders, founding member of the New York Dolls and the Heartbreakers, and worked as a sideman on Thunders' debut solo album. So Alone, notably appearing together on the classic You Can't Put Your Arms Around a Memory. However, drug addiction, particularly heroin use, derailed their career, and Parrott had only sporadically been heard from since the band broke up in 1982. Yeah, they only put out three albums.
Yeah, that's sort of a shame. It kind of reminds me of Big Star.
I was going to say that too. Big Star doesn't really, they get a lot of credit in like music circles, but they don't get a lot of credit for really kicking off the
power pop,
the power thing. Pop, punk rock, whatever you want to call it. This sort of alternative to, I guess, progressive rock that was prominent in the 70s.
Big at its time, yeah.
Yeah. They were huge influences, and I guess they're sort of, these guys are, or at least the singer was it Peter Parrott? Yeah, he was largely considered the British Johnny Thunders. So it's real interesting. I've never heard of these guys. But it's really interesting so far.
Well, I might have heard of them in passing, but again, I never really, for some reason, it didn't click. But the name The Only Ones does sort of, there's something there that clicked in my past, but I knew I'd never heard anything of there. Just that I knew there was a band called The Only Ones or something. And even then, that was a very vague bell. So,
I think I'm in the same vein as you. It's like I may have heard the name somewhere, but didn't know anything about them. It's 1 degree removed from never hearing of them. But yeah, no, the first song, it was a little tough to get through just because it was like, and that's an odd choice to open the album with, I have to say. Because it really is. I mean, but then when the second song came as Another Girl, Another Planet, I was like, oh, okay. All right. Okay. I can get into this. Yeah. And then by the time The Beast had ended, I was like, yeah, this is really good. This is really good stuff. It's almost like his vocals don't quite match the music. Like the music, like his vocal style, like the music should be like harder almost.
I thought, you know, production wise, it almost like his voice didn't fit. Like they needed to do something else with his voice to make it fit the music a little bit better. I noticed that a little bit.
Yeah, I felt his voice was a little thin and a little like too much in the mid range. It could have used a little more higher end and maybe a little more bass, just to EQ a little bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, mixing is very hard, so I'm not going to complain too much. It's fine. It sounds fine.
It's the way it is. You know, going back and changing history is like, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I guess we'll move on to the second side of the album. And it starts off with the song Creature of Doom. So here we go. Okay, and ending the album with The Immortal Story. That last song was amazing. I mean, that instrumental part, it's just like, wow, this is pretty cool. I mean, I'm really liking this.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But yeah, I'm more and more getting into this period of, you know, just like that power pop sort of thing. I've always been a fan of the power pop of the 60s, mm-hmm. but the power pop of the 70s, absolutely. And even into the 80s.
Yeah.
It's sort of a punk adjacent, new wave adjacent sort of genre.
It's rock and roll. Yeah. There's all these labels. It's rock and roll. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say something about his voice. I can't remember what I was going to say. Well, you, oh, yeah, after you mentioned about the, you pointed out as, that it's like a combination between Lou Reed and Mark Bolan. It's like, oh, yeah, I hear that. I so hear that, especially with some of his phrasing is very Lou Reed. And yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I'm very pleasantly surprised with this album. Yeah, it's yeah, I mean, I don't think there's really a bad song on the album. I would maybe arrange the songs on the album a little bit differently. I wouldn't open with The Whole of the Law. I would put that a little further into the album just to get people sort of warmed up to his voice.
That might be like an opener for the second side or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, it is where it is and
true.
I'll take it as it is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But other than that, I don't really have any complaints.
No, not really.
The playing on it is great. The guitar playing is really good.
Yeah, the band is actually really tight.
They really are. For a debut album, yeah, they really are.
Yeah.
I like that they add, like I like that they added the overdubs of the horns and the keyboards. It's done very very tastefully. It's not in your face.
It's not like overproduced or anything like that. It's exactly, it's like I wanted them there and they're just there being, you know, just another little flavor as opposed to saturating it in overproduction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's there to support the song, not to say, hey, listen to this horn player, listen to what they can do. You know, it's there just as to fill the sound out a little bit. Yeah.
Not that I have anything wrong with like bands like Chicago or Blood, Sweat, and Tears, because I actually really love horn section bands like that.
Right, but sometimes it can get to the point where it's like, does that really need to be there?
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Sometimes, and the 70s was bad for that. Actually, the 60s was bad for that too, where there was this need, like if something got a little bit too commercialized, wound up being like this. They had to make a big production out of it, and it was a little bit too much.
Yeah,
in a lot of cases. And the 60s and 70s were actually really bad for that in a lot of places. And a lot of that stuff is now forgotten because, you know, stuff like the Beatles and everybody else that put out good stuff kind of rose to the top, even if they weren't at the top of the charts at the time.
Yeah. Well, that's the. Not that's a whole other thing, but
that's just a tangent I went on.
Yeah, I can edit this out, but I have something to say about that. Is
okay.
People, especially older people, they tend to go on rants about today's crap pop music.
Yes.
They're forgetting all the crap pop music that was out in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and whenever they grew up, because it doesn't last. It's forgotten.
Yes.
And the best of the best always stays relevant, but there was a lot of shit in the 70s and the 60s.
Yeah.
You just forget about it.
There was a lot of novelty stuff. There was a lot of, just overproduced stuff. A lot of just like, you know, what's a hit song, or let's take all the hit songs, get like a studio band, usually one with an orchestra or something like that, to redo them without vocals, and just crank these things out like they're paper plates, and you know, sell them to I'm not 100% sure who they sold them to, but they were everywhere, and you see them in, like, you know, budget baskets at Value Village and stuff like that.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And not just re-recordings of songs, but like even like just like you pull out an album at one of those discount stores, and it's like, who is that? never heard of them. I don't know these songs. It's like that.
Yeah,
stuff,
well, there's some of that too, but I don't know. There was a lot of like instrumental music that would like, and I'm not talking about like Booker T and the MGs. They did that too, but they did it really well. And there were bands like that too that did stuff really well. Plus, they had their own stuff. They were just, you know, a really good band. And when you got them to back somebody else, who had an act that was completely on fire.
But anyway, getting back to this album, and I guess that sort of brings us to the question is, would you listen to this album again?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is quite good. In fact, I'm probably going to put it in my power pop list from like, you know, bands like... The Stranglers, and who else? There's lots of other bands that I like to put in that list and stuff like that. Thought were excellent. So
yeah, no, me too. I'll definitely listen to this album again. Like other than that one song being maybe misplaced in the album, I wouldn't take it off the album. I would just place it differently.
Put it somewhere else. Yeah.
yeah. Other than that, no complaints. I would absolutely listen to this again. It's pretty good. So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you very much for listening if you made it this far. We want to hear from you whether you agree or disagree with the review of our of this album. You can do that a couple ways. You can go to the contact page at our website, polyphonicpress.com. It's polyphonicpress.com/contact. And you can leave a review, a rating and review wherever you're listening to this album, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever. And if you feel inclined, you can also check out our Patreon page, and you can get these episodes the day before they go live. Patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Vincent.